Hope you can hear me, and we are going to start the Dhamma sermon, today's mindfulness for young adult session. And today we are going to start a new sermon or new theme. Actually, last time we completed Hemavata Sutta, and now we are going to discuss the next sutta in that series. So it's called Alavaka Sutta. This is a very popular sutta, and most of you are definitely familiar with it. And in one occasion, Buddha went to one of the, say, Yakka's places. So while Buddha was in Alavi, and at that time, Buddha knew that this particular Yakka is somewhat rough in his nature. And now anyway, Buddha wants to calm him down, to settle him down, but he is in a very angry mood. And when he got the news that Buddha has come there and he was preaching to his wives, then this particular Yakka become further really agitated, ferocious, and then he came rushing to meet the Buddha, and he immediately asked the Buddha to go out. And in order, as a kind of a strategy, what Buddha did was he simply went out. And then this Yakka got a kind of a feeling that this one seems to be an obedient person, so let me take him again in, so that I am going to make him really tired by going here from this end to the other end, so let me take him in again. So then he again invites, just come back. Then Buddha again came back. So basically, all right, friend, and he simply came back. So now again, he is back in the Yakka's place. Now again, Yakka orders, okay, go out. And again, the Buddha went out. So likewise, this has happened three times. So for three times, Buddha agreed. He again and again, going out and again coming back, going out and again coming back. Now, as a result of that, now the Yakka's, this Alavaka's mind has become somewhat relaxed. Now he has a different strategy now. Previously he was somewhat ferocious, quite angry. But now his mind, by seeing the way Buddha is behaving, has somewhat relaxed, calmed down. And at that moment, again when Alavaka is asking Buddha to leave, then Buddha refused. So it happens as the last one. Chatuttampiko alavako yakko bhagavantang etada vocha. Nikkama samanati. Dakvahantang avuso nikkamissam. Yante karaniyang tang karohiti. Now Buddha stops. Now basically previous three occasions Buddha simply agreed or simply obeyed what Alavaka wants to do. But at the fourth stage, now Buddha said, no, I am not going to go out. You do whatever you like. Now this is very much interesting. So how Buddha has used various techniques to tame certain difficult people, to be tamed. Now you know, if we consider Angulimala. So Angulimala being a really murderer at that moment. So Buddha used some sort of another strategy to tame him. Buddha knew that he has certain potential and he has the capacity, but in order to arouse it, so Buddha uses various strategies which is much unique to that person in a way. Now here, Alavaka, on the other hand, being a Yakka and being somewhat belittled by Buddha's action that while his absence Buddha has come to his house, now he tried to make Buddha fairly tired, but now Buddha refused going out. And Buddha in a way challenged now, okay, you do whatever you like, I'm not going to go out. Now here, now Alavaka basically had learned certain Dhamma from his lineage, maybe from his generation, and now he is coming with another way, okay, I'm going to ask you certain questions. If you are not going to answer them, so I'll make you insane. And I'll grab you from the feet and hurl you across the Ganges. was a kind of a challenge again Alaka is making to the Buddha. And at this moment, Buddha simply say another very interesting point, that he say that I do not see that anyone in this world, I mean, this world not only Yakkas, this world has Devas, Maras, Brahmas, humans, many, many beings are available. I do not see anyone who is capable of drive me insane and even split my heart or grab me by the feet and hurl me across the Ganges. There is no person in this whole world I see that who can do it. But anyway, you can ask any question. So I'm going to answer those questions. So it's a very interesting way how Buddha approach certain untamable people, untamable beings, and he is successfully taming them. So probably you can recognize these kinds of occasions like Angulimala, Nalagiri, Alavaka. So these kinds of situations or incidents show an interesting quality available in the Buddha. So he has the unsurpassed quality of taming untamable people, untamable beings. Purisa Dhamma Sarati. And now Alavaka starts asking questions. So here actually we have some interesting points to learn as Dhamma practitioners. Now he is asking very interesting questions. Kinsu the Vittang Purisasa Settang Kinsu Suchinang Sukamava Hati Kinsu Have Sadhu Tarang Rasanang Katang Jeeving Jeevita Mahu Settang Kinsu the Vittang Purisasa Settang. Now he is asking, what is a person's best treasure? Now there are various treasures for people. It may be money, it may be paddy, it may be grains, it may be children, or it may be the education, it may be the various other, say, designations, social status. So many, many things are there, and it may be gold, it may be various things. So likewise, there are various treasures available, and now he's asking what would be the best treasure for a person. And kinsu suchinnang sukamavahati. And if what practice which will bring the happiness? Kinsu have sadhu tarang rasana. What is the sweetest taste? And katang jivin jivita mahusettam. Among various practices, if one is, how one can have a kind of a best life by having what? By practicing what? By possessing what? So this is in a way very interesting, because this is not merely, actually Buddha does not merely give kind of a worldly kind of answer here. So he has seen both sides in a way. So certain situations we can say the wealth is one of the interesting thing, important thing. Maybe our children may be really important. Maybe our education is really important. Our economy is really important. So likewise, we can give various present day definitions, answers. But here, Buddha see some more depth and he give a different answer. Saddhita vittang purisasa settang. Dhammo suchinno sukamava hati. Satchang have sadhu tarang rasanang. Panya jeeving jeevita mahu settang. Saddhita vittang purisasa settang. So now Buddha says, faith is here a person's best treasure. Faith. Dhammo suchinno sukamava hati. If one is practicing Dhamma well, so that will bring happiness. Satchang have sadhu tarang rasana. So among those sweetest taste, truth really will bring you the sweetest taste. Truth. Panya jeeving jeevita mahu settang. The one living with wisdom, endowed with wisdom, may enjoy the best in one's life. Now, if we look at it a little deeply, saddhita vittang purisasa settang. So why Buddha mention saddha as so important? The thing is, without saddha, we may not start anything. So we have to have some sort of faith. We have to have some kind of confidence, conviction, in order to start something. Now, if you have any confidence in a particular person, then you start looking at him, you start associating him, you start listening to him, you start asking questions from him, you start sharing your difficulties with him, because you feel kind of a confidence with him. You have some faith in him. You feel trust in him. So basically that trust, that faith, in that sense, quite important. So that plays actually a vital role in our meditation as well. Because we can't immediately have results. So even in our practice, we may be practicing for several years, and probably still we didn't enjoy quite a tangible results. But why are we still continuing? That is because of the faith. So I know, okay, these things are difficult or these things are available, but still I am not capable of doing it. But if I am trying hard, if I continue for the time, definitely I may enjoy the results. So that kind of a faith, even though right now I am not enjoying it, so let me continue. Let me maintain the faith. Let me listen to him. Let me come and ask a question. So likewise, so we are practicing the Buddha's teaching at the beginning very much because of the faith. But the interesting part in the Buddha's teaching is that that very faith is not limited to a kind of a blind kind of a faith. So you can verify that faith. It is not that someone has imposed that. Rather, you simply have some kind of a faith, but later that faith become quite obvious, or you can verify that faith and you can have some tangible results. At the beginning, you simply have a trust as a faith. And then later, slowly, you also get into the practice. You yourself start practicing. And as a result of that, little by little, you start feeling confident with your own results. It is not merely based on what Buddha has mentioned, or simply as a Buddha, as a person. Now, you are now trying to implement what Buddha has mentioned, what you have learned from him. And slowly you start verifying the whole thing through your own life. So that is quite different. Now, when compared to the other religions, you continuously have to maintain kind of a faith, and you can't even question, you can't even verify. Now, simply certain statements are there, certain dogmatic teachings are there, and we simply have to follow them blindly, and simply we have to trust them. And mostly the results also may be available after the life, after the death, after this life. So we can't even verify that. But on the other hand, in the Buddha's teaching, we have the privilege, or we have the fortune, to practice Buddha's teaching and to verify those faith-based things in this very life. Then it is not merely kind of a faith related thing. Rather, even though at the beginning we need certain amount of faith to continue, to get on, to start, but later we can verify that faith. So therefore Buddha has given a real emphasis to this faith, and that is why it has become a kind of a faculty, kind of a power. But later it has turned into a kind of a verifiable thing. As a result of that, now you are very much like developing the whole path, not just because of the faith, but you yourself enjoy it, or you yourself benefiting from the practice. It is helping to drive. It is helping to further continue. That's why if you consider the 37 Bodhipakkhiya Dhammas, the 4 Satipatthanas, then 4 kinds of efforts, and then 4 Iddipadas, and then 4 or rather 5 faculties, 5 balas, 5 powers, and 5 faculties and 5 powers actually have the faith. Later, when it is getting to 7 enlightened factors, faith is not there. And the Noble Eightfold Path, faith is not there. But now, when one is getting to the level of, say, no, 7 and 9 point factors, Bojangles, and the Noble Eightfold Path. So that is where one is enjoying the results, or one is having some tangible results through his own practice. Now it is not merely a book knowledge. Now it is not merely a saying or just a teaching. Rather, it is kind of a practical thing, and one himself has practiced it, and one himself has developed such certain qualities in one's heart. As a result of that, now he has some tangible results. Now he is continuing, further continuing. Dhammo suchinno sukamavahati. Now, if one is practicing Dhamma well, it will obviously give a kind of a happy life. Now, even that Buddha highlighted when he is teaching the Satipatthana. So he starts the Satipatthana telling, Ekāyano vayam bhikkhave manko sattānam siddhiya soka pariddhavānam samatikkamāya dukkha dhommanassānam attangamāya. So in order to overcome sorrow and lamentation, in order to overcome despair, worries, now all these things are in a way some positive results or positive benefits that we all can look forward. And Buddha promised that those will be available if one is practicing diligently. Even in the Satipatthana level, so Buddha mentioned, so if one is practicing mindfulness for a considerable period of time, slowly it will overcome different kinds of worries, sorrows, lamentations, despair available in the mind. So instead, kind of a purification of the mind has to happen. And the mindfulness has to be developed, clarity of the mind has to be developed, wisdom has to be developed. And those things, as we are practicing, we simply have to, in a way, observe, simply have to verify, simply have to feel in ourselves. We can't ask someone else to and check whether we can't ask from someone else whether I have mindfulness, whether I have faith, or whether I have kind of developed clear comprehension. But I myself should know comparatively how much is my mind operating right now. How much I was worried several years ago. Now as a result of the practice, whether it has reduced. Whether I can, now I am capable of maintaining life without much worries, without crying, without lamentation. So do I have any that kind of a considerable behavioral changes in my life? Am I able to maintain kind of a calm, relaxed, stable mind? Now these are the ways that we can verify whether the practice is really working in ourselves. This Dhamma well practice brings happiness. So that has to be practiced. So that Dhamma has to be practiced. It's not merely we are looking, reading through the book. It has to be lived. It has to be practiced. So if we are living according to it, if we are practicing according to it, then definitely we have to have these results, and we should start enjoying those results. It doesn't mean that we may not go through the difficulties in the life. We may not go through the aging and going through various bodily sickness and all these things. Those things still happen. So that is the human world. Aging process, getting old, and time to time going through certain illnesses. So these things are obvious when we are unavoidable when we are in this human realm. But even though we go through those ups and downs, how about the mind? Are we able to maintain kind of a relaxed mind, free from stress, free from lamentation, free from worries, amidst all these difficulties? Now, this is the way that we can verify whether this answer to this alavaka is really true. Satchang have sadhu tarang rasana. So among various tastes, now here Buddha mentions satcha. The truth gives the best kind of a taste. So certain other times Buddha mentioned, say, Dhamma itself has the taste, the utmost kind of a taste. Now here the satcha Also, we can say it's a Dhamma. So even one can take it to the level of noble, so what you call this Four Noble Truths, Chaturara Satya. So whatever, I mean, the Satya Buddha mentioned here as the one bringing the most sweetest taste. And again, Panya Jeeving Jeevitamahu Settam. So one who is living with wisdom is the best of life. There may be people who are enjoying various luxuries and enjoying different kinds of assets, wealth, and many, many things are available nowadays. And we also feel that they are living the best life. They are enjoying the life. Their life is quite interesting, and there's no friction. But if we really look at them, are they really happy? If you look at them, are they really free from any stress? Are they really free from any kind of an agitation? Do they really have no problem? So is the outside appearance of their life, is it really represent the inside life of their life? So these are certain interesting points that we can see. Because sometimes we immediately come to certain conclusions simply by looking at the outside. People are wearing very beautiful clothes. Maybe they are wearing very expensive clothes and trying to show off, trying to maintain their social status or family status and various things that people are sometimes pretending. But when we start associating them, probably we can understand how worried they are, how frightened they are, and how many loans they have taken from a particular, say, bank or institute. So that is how they are sort of showing that they are living a kind of a luxurious life. But internally, in their spiritual life or in their inner life, they are very much like poor, not that rich. But on the other hand, a person may be maintaining kind of a frugal life, maybe not really a luxurious or not really a rich kind of a life, but can manage, but still maintaining a good family life, maintaining good relationship, and maintaining his, say, spiritual life as well. How about that kind of a life? So what are the, in a way, measurements that we are giving more value? Is it the real outer appearance that we are giving more value or more marks? Or is it the kind of a stable, relaxed, and more mature kind of a life that we are giving more value? So these are, in a way, certain things that we can look at. So why Buddha mentioned living by wisdom? They say one's life is best. Not living with more wealth, not living with more power, not living with any other, say, typical today's economic terms, but rather Buddha here mentioned living by wisdom. They say one's life is best. So these are interesting answers that Buddha in a way has given. Probably we can think why Buddha answering like this. Now, Alokayakka, on the other hand, we can look at it from the point of the context. Alokayakka is a person who is enjoying the family life, enjoying the typical sensual life, and he also being a kind of a chief into the group of yakkas. He has a kind of a status, designation, kind of a respectful situation. Now, probably he might have this his own value judgments, and he anyway has certain questions which is coming from his generations. Now he's asking those questions, and Buddha is giving a different meaning to those questions. And now he is changing in a way. Now the Alavaka is now changing because of the radical answers of the Buddha. Now if you are simply obeying the Yakka and simply trying to answer so that he is pleased, and that is one way that people are doing when someone, a powerful person, is asking certain questions. So I feel, okay, I am, if I give the correct answer, I'll be in trouble. So I better give an answer so that he is pleased, even though the answer is not correct. But I know that this person will accept that answer and he is more agreeable to that answer, then better I'll give this answer. So likewise, certain people are giving wrong answers simply to satisfy others, simply to get praised by others. But here Buddha, of course, not being afraid of anyone, so Buddha gives a straight answer, strong answer, more spiritual answer, so that the Alavakayaka start looking at the Dhamma or looking at the teaching more differently. Now he already has some kind of a maybe faith system, kind of value judgment system, or his own kind of understanding. But here with the Buddha's answers, at the latter stages, we can see how he has changed his life. How he has come under the refuge of the Buddha, Dhamma, the Sangha. So interestingly, Buddha started the whole discussion in a way, little being flexible to the Alavaka and making him to little relax his mind, and so that he is not angry. Now his mind is capable of listening carefully, so that reflect Buddha's answers. So this is in a way allowing Alavaka to understand the teaching, understand Buddha's answers. If Buddha immediately asks, or rather immediately give these things, immediately start preaching, probably Alavaka might not be able to understand, because its mindset is not suitable at that time. But seeing how Buddha, being flexible and being innocent, how Buddha going in, going out, going in, going out. So this very action probably have a kind of an impact on Alavaka's mind. And later he is asking now questions, now slowly, so that relaxed mind of the Alavaka is capable of understanding Buddha's teaching, understanding Buddha's answers. So we'll discuss further, maybe next time. And with that, I'd like to conclude today's part. And now I'll have an open session for questions.
Answer Bhante, we have 5 questions today.
Right.
Number 1 of 5, mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, much merits for this valuable program which encourages me to put some effort into a regular practice. My sitting and walking practice were progressing during the last 2 years due to your valuable guidance. I understand the relief in non-attached state in both sitting and walking processes and try to extend from there to be mindful on whatever gets the focus and attention during the practice. My question is regarding the time I spent away from this practice session. There's a clear improvement in the way I think and react, but it is far from non-attached state. Even though I do not react, I find myself getting emotional fluctuations more than before my practice. These are nothing special, but gross forms of anger, frustration, liking, disliking, jealousy, lust, etc. Bhante advised that these can be due to the improvement of mindfulness, where we get more sensitive and see things which are gone beyond us before practice. Also, I can understand that these can be latent, hidden tendencies coming up often and seen often. This brings up the frustration I have about my mind, thoughts, and feelings. It can be the workings of dispassion and disenchantment, overall negative and gloomy nature. I'm ready to accept these, but wondering where I can see some light at the end of the tunnel, where overall negative and gloomy feelings on how my mind works go away. I'm ready to accept these, but wondering where I can see some light at the end of the tunnel, where overall negative and gloomy feelings on how my mind works. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, that very understanding is a good thing, because you know, otherwise no one will tell you all this. So we ourselves have to understand all these shortcomings in our lives. So certainly sometimes when we become elderly or when we become grown-ups, so others are very much hesitant to show our faults. Now, when we are young, our teachers, our parents may start telling you, okay, you got to correct this, you got to correct that. So likewise, they start advising us. But as we are growing up, so that advice we lose, and we become on our own. And sometimes we are growing with a lot of mistakes. And we are continuing with those mistakes. So that is in a way harmful to ourselves. But the mindfulness practice, as we are continuing, so it is now becoming our teacher, becoming our counselor, becoming our observing process, monitoring process. So the mindfulness helps to understand our shortcomings. So therefore, don't worry thinking that I have this problem, I have that problem, I have this shortcoming, I have that shortcoming, I have so much of defilements. So likewise, we start a little overwhelmed by understanding how, in a way, defiled my mind is. Even though I am practicing several years, still my mind has so many defilements. So likewise, we may have what we call as the nekkhammasika domanas, kind of a little despair, which is coming with respect to the spiritual life. So that is also being discussed in the Dhamma. But what we need to understand is, now we are in the path, we are continuing, we are taking an action. It is not that we simply being a poor victim of this whole process, but now you have to have some faith, okay, I'm working with it. And very understanding that I have a problem. It's a situation that I am working for a solution. So the mostly what happens is we don't even know that we have a problem. We don't even know that my mind has so much of defilements. We don't even know that my mind has these kind of wrong tendencies. So wrong, say, mental patterns or thinking patterns. And we are quite trapped in such situation. We are merely slaves or poor victims of the process. But now with the practice, now those difficulties, those shortcomings, those defilements are all very much like visible to us. So we know what are the problems we have. We know what are the wrong tendencies we have. We know what are the areas I still have to correct. So that is then we have much more opportunity to correct ourselves. So we can't expect someone else to come and show these things, someone else to come and correct ourselves. Rather, now the mindfulness practice is now again and again showing us, okay, you got to correct this, you got to correct that, you have this problem, you have that problem, you have this shortcoming, that shortcoming. So in a way, that is good. Still, I have to work out. Still, I have something to grow. I am also not stopped. I am continuing the practice. So therefore, please have the confidence, have the trust in the teaching, and you also continue the daily practice. So don't expect immediate results. So basically, sometimes when we start feeling our mind, when we start reading our mind, when we start understanding various problems in our mind, difficulties, then we sometimes feel negative or feel worried, because it has so many things to fix. But the very practice is allowing us to slowly develop certain alternative paths, certain refuge, as you indicated in your writing, very much like that unattached state of mind. So then actually we have a certain refuge developed through the practice. Again and again, we are capable of maintaining the mind free from attachments or free from any defilement, free from stress. So likewise, on such situation, the practice has given us some tangible results. So till that, anyway, we need to continue, and we have to continue. and maintain some faith, and slowly we start developing kind of a confidence, okay, even though life may bring me various difficulties, various challenges, and still I also not a perfect person. Anyway, I am confident now, okay, this is what I have to do. So likewise, the practice is telling us or giving us that strength, that confidence, and with that we can continue. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 3, this is regarding mindful walking. Dear Venerable Sir, during walking practice, my mind gets distracted to various sounds and thoughts. This happens after 15 to 20 minutes in the walking, when the observations under my soul start to fade away during the natural auto walking time. I used to focus back to the observations and restart the mindfulness practice to avoid these distractions. Based on Venerable's advice during the last few sessions, I tried to stay with the sounds around me and allowed it to come in or open up the distractions with a positive attitude. I did not move focus away from the sounds. They appeared to be all over my walking path, and I could still walk in between them with the observations still going on. If I explain a bit more, initially my whole mindful observation space was filled with the sensations of the soles of the foot and the walking process. Then I realized I got slipped to a distraction of sounds which covered the whole space. Now I let it be without switching the focus back to the walking, but expand the mind space of mindfulness where the walking observations start to appear again. Once this happens, I can walk effortlessly among any sound, and this space seemed to be more balanced and relaxed, where both distraction and the mindful object coexist. I continue walking until the bell rings. Thought of writing my reflection with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, not bad. So basically, you are trying various your own findings, and developing certain amount of confidence. That is good. And on the other hand, these skills will bring kind of a natural growth into our practice. So for example, previously we have to purposely or deliberately we have to maintain mindfulness, otherwise our mind get distracted. It may jump to the past, jump to the future, jump to this and that. So very much like a monkey mind. But now you have developed certain amount of capacity where you can maintain your mind without much trouble, either in walking or either with the sound. So you are hearing a sound and you are capable of listening to that, and it is not much of a trouble, and you are not getting agitated because of the sound. And if you want, you can put it back to the path, the foot as well. That means you are maintaining kind of a stability in yourself now. So mind is somewhat under your control. Somewhat it is tamed. So this was not available, I mean, some time back. But anyway, further to develop, now, I mean, you can actually understand how the sound behaves. Now we need to investigate these different phenomena. Now sound is one type of phenomena. Say our foot has the sensation type of phenomena. Say while walking, the weight transfer from this leg to the other leg, that's another phenomena. So likewise, various phenomena are there throughout the world, and we are experiencing them. Now you can investigate them as well, not just trying to maintain a kind of a relaxed mind onto different these phenomena. Rather, you investigate how these phenomena are behaving. What is their true nature? What can I learn from them? What are their common characteristics? So likewise, if we further investigate these phenomena, so they start teaching us. So that will further develop another aspect of our practice. That is what we call them as the insights or the insight practice. So this insight knowledges may happen only when we continue these kind of investigations. So just being with the phenomena equanimously is not the real challenge or real kind of a path. But while being with these phenomena, we need to investigate. So the investigation will help to grow certain amount of wisdom, and then with that wisdom, so the mind start letting go all these different things, and mind may find its own mindful space. So that mindful space, so that kind of relaxed state, unattached state, is much more prominent or much more relaxed, much more helping to maintain well-being in oneself, and that is much more advanced in a way. So therefore, I feel that you can try towards that direction and not just being satisfied where you are. And therefore, I invite you to further investigate. Either it may be sound, either it may be sights, either it may be sensation, doesn't matter. But I mean, if these sensations, or rather the sights, sounds are not really distracting, you can actually start investigating them as well. And on the other hand, you can still maintain the contact, the foot, those sensations as your main source of investigation. And you can continue the investigation, because this investigation is the one producing a lot of wisdom, which is ultimately helping to free the mind, to let go of all these different attachments. Okay.
Question number 3 of 6. That's a general question. Dear Bhante, if time permits, much merits, if you can briefly explain how one develops sitting and walking mindful practice further to build Indriya, Bala and Bhojanga. We still recall Bhante gave a very detailed explanation 2 years ago during the Anapanasati Sutta Dhamma talk over many weeks. Much merits, Bhante. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, so basically that's why, so at the beginning we are simply trying to maintain the bare attention, as we already discussed, because that is very much like purposeful development of mindfulness. Otherwise mind gets distracted. So we are now taking one of the present moment activity, present moment incident, phenomena, to maintain our attention. So that may be the first stage. We are focusing our attention onto a particular phenomena. And once that is successful, we start investigating those phenomena. And as a result of that, certain amount of wisdom is also available. Now, at that level, if we verify our mind, there are various skills already developed. Mindfulness is one skill. Concentration is another skill. Faith already have. Effort we already have. A certain amount of wisdom is already have. So that what we call as the faculty, indriya, saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, panya. The faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration and the wisdom. Now these are the certain positive qualities that we have developed. Now as we further continue our practice, now it comes to another level. Even the absence of these qualities, we are not much worried or not much shattered. We develop kind of a self-confidence that I know the techniques to develop these different qualities, and I know how to come out of the negative qualities. Very much like you have some your own hands-on experience. It is not just because of the teacher or the book that you are surviving. Rather, you yourself has your own toolkit. You have developed your own methods. You have your own toolkit. Now you have more confidence. Even when you are, the mind is not mindful, you are not that worried, because you know very quickly you can establish mindfulness. Even though currently you sometimes don't feel like more energetic, you know you can quickly develop energy. Similarly, you know that mind is somewhat scattered. You are not worried, because you know quickly you can again concentrate the mind. Again, you can develop the collectedness of the mind. Sometimes you know that mind has gone to various distractions and neglectful, but still you are not worried. Because you know you can quickly arouse wisdom, again take the mind back to the proper track. So likewise, now you develop that side, that kind of a confidence. That is the level that we are calling as the bala, the spiritual power level. Now, anyway, so while we are going through these all stages, the bhojangas are also parallelly developing. So that is the first level of Or the first, say we can call as the bojangas, enlightenment factors, are parallel developing as a result of the practice. And later, one may reach another level of bojangas or another different practice methodology of bojangas. Previously, bojangas are developed, as we discussed, kind of a purposeful way. You establish mindfulness, you are continuing the investigation, and you are maintaining the proper amount of effort, and you continue to have kind of a balance. So likewise, the bojangas are also developing. But as we discussed just few minutes ago, when mind starts letting go, unattached, now you are reaching another stage of developing bojangas. That's what we repeatedly mentioned, kind of a relaxed mind. Now it is not you are purposely holding the mind, deliberately maintaining kind of a mindfulness. Rather, you are switching to a level of effortless mindfulness. You are allowing the mind to relax. If it wants, it can get distracted, but you are learning through that distraction. You are maintaining the mind very much in a relaxed state, because this relaxed state is unattached relaxed state. So there's another, we can say, another level of developing bojangas. So likewise, we can see different practice strategies that Buddha has employed when he's teaching us mindfulness, teaching us the insight practice.
Question number 5 of 6. This is also related to bojangas, so I thought I'd bring this up here. So Dhamma Sarman question though. Bhante mentioned during the Dhamma Sarman that one starts enjoying the results of the practice when at the bojanga level and at the eightfold path. Appreciating Bhante can explain it a bit, but those results one would enjoy at this level of the path with metta.
Yeah, actually I wanted to highlight about the faith as a spiritual quality, because if you see these lists, now the 4 satipatthana, now 37 bodhipakkhiya dhammas, so it has different categories, starting with 4 satipatthana, then 4 efforts, then 4 iddipada. So none of, I mean, they also don't have the faith. Anyway, from the faculties we can recognize the faith. The bala we can we can recognize the faith, and again faith is not available in the 7 enlightenment factors. Faith is not available at the noble eightfold path. So why faith is not there? So in a way we can argue now it is not merely faith which is helping you to continue. Rather, it is more you are convinced about the practice. You yourself have received, or you yourself have developed certain amount of qualities which is necessary, and now you have sensed the path, very much like you are continuing the path not merely based on the faith, but you know it is the correct path, you know it is the thing to do, you know that certain further development has to be done. So likewise, you are more convinced. Now, previously, we may be continuing the practice. We are get on to the practice because of the faith. We believe, okay, I may get the results. We believe, okay, Buddha has taught the teaching. Buddha has taught the correct Dhamma. So that's a kind of a belief. But now it is no more a belief. You yourself have your own results, mindfulness, concentration, and your calmness of the mind, clarity of the mind, whatever these wisdom time to time. So likewise, time to time you enjoy certain amount of spiritual qualities, and as a result of that, it is not merely based on the belief. So that's what I want to highlight. So when it is coming to the bojanga level and the noble eightfold path level, so the faith is not that highlighted, because it is not merely the faith driving you. Rather, spiritual qualities already developed have the momentum to take us further to the, maybe to the fulfillment. So, and probably we can sometimes in the Dhamma certain categories are also available among the, say, between two groups. That's why it is mentioned as Saddhanusari, Dhammanusari. So Saddhanusari is more a faith-driven character. Dhammanusari is more kind of a wisdom-driven character. So actually, I am talking here very much into that category, the wisdom-driven character. So he has already earned certain amount of spiritual qualities, and he has more confident now, based on his own verification, on based on his own practice. Now he's continuing. He's a Dhamma follower. Sometimes people are faith followers. Doesn't matter, by the way. I mean, we don't need to think, okay, the faith follower is, or rather the Dhamma follower is better than the faith follower. We don't need to even do that kind of a comparison. But those categories are also highlighted in the Dhamma. So such, I mean, tendencies in our mind, we can recognize sometimes. It doesn't matter, by the way. Somehow it's a matter of continuing the path.
Question number 5 of 6. This is a general question. It's regarding the retreat, actually. Dear Bhante, we are getting ready for Most Venerable Mahathera's retreat next week. During these intense practice programs, first 4 to 5 days are spent on getting used to the physical discomfort and settling in. Hope Bhante can give us a few tips on how to do well in retreats from the experience of Mahathera. That's the end of the question.
Probably you can practice some yoga and you can practice some exercises. You can, because I mean, as you said, say first few days may be a little difficult because you are not used to the posture. But if you are young, if you still can try, definitely you can actually, rather than sitting on a chair, probably you can practice a little bit of stretching and all these things. Because sometimes our body can be trained. So we simply don't need to say obey the requests of the body, rather a little bit of skill that we can stretch. See, while sitting, if you are able to maintain 30 minutes, now you can stretch it to 31 minutes on the next session, rather than immediately changing the posture. So likewise, probably we can stretch it till 45-50 minutes, and that's a considerable period of time. I mean, you don't need to expect sitting for hours even. That is not the point. Rather, we can balance. So the practice is not that we are crunching our teeth and maintaining a very strenuous posture for hours. Rather, it is a very much like a kind of a balance. So while maintaining a particular posture, how we are developing the mind? And is it because of the too strenuous posture that we get stressed because of the session? So then, of course, definitely we have stretched it too much. Then we have to change the posture. We have to relax ourselves more. Because the practice, the proper practice, can't bring us any stress. So typically, at the end of the session, if our mind is relaxed, if our mind feels more comfortable, and sometimes actually the Vipassana practice can give a little bit of heaviness. If you are practicing, say, real investigation for a long time, sometimes it can be a little dry. Sometimes it can produce some amount of heaviness to the mind. But later, those things all become somewhat balanced. But anyway, the general advice is, if you are maintaining proper balance, at the end of the session, we have to have a kind of a fresh mind, have to have a kind of a relaxed mind, how to have a more uplifted mind, a serene, calm, relaxed mind. But on the opposite, at the end of the practice, if the mind is really tensed, if we feel really uncomfortable, if we can't really sleep, the mind is really heavy, so that means something has gone wrong. So we have done some mistake during our practice. Probably we have maintained some strenuous posture for an unbearable time. So we have stressed ourselves, or we have stretched ourselves too much. So likewise, we need to check whether the posture is giving us the real support, giving us the proper support, or are we unnecessarily stretching it. So these are the little tips I'd like to share with you.
Question number 6 or 7. This is a number 7 question. Venerable Bhante, I often wonder who are the yakkas, demons. Are they a different type of beings or are they humans with full of anger and hatred? That's the end of the question.
I mean, yeah. I mean, this is kind of a controversial problem that we can't give an immediate answer. So sometimes different answers are possible. Sometimes people tend to think that they are a kind of, say, ferocious kind of group of people, group of human beings. But some, on the other hand, certain people say, I mean, they are different, completely a different kind of a group of beings. Now, say, for example, we, according to the Buddha's or the Buddhist, say, world analysis. So, human world is one world, one level of, one plane of existence. And then we call, when we talk the celestial realms, and then there also we have different categories, 6 celestial realms that we are talking. In the very lowest celestial realm, Chatum Maharajika, so that is the most closer realm to the earth. So there are another subcategories are available. So sometimes people are attributing yakkas to, so those kind of very, you know, the most closest celestial realm. And they also have their own servants, their own other categories. So likewise, many, many subdivisions are there. So it is quite difficult for me to give the exact answer here. But like many variations, variant answers are available. Certain commentaries give one answer, certain scholars give different answer. So likewise, bit difficult to give exactly, okay, this is kind of a true and false answer. Rather, we can say sometimes yakka, the term yakka is also used in the Pali literature to represent someone who is attached to the self-view. So even to the celestial beings, sometimes Buddha addressed them as yakka. Now when God Sakka sometimes come to meet the Buddha, and when Buddha is addressing him, sometimes Buddha has addressed him as a yakka. So therefore, yakka as a Pali term also sometimes used to address a non-human being, a person who is having the kind of the self-view. So likewise, I mean, different answers are there, and yakkas, I mean, this group of whoever the beings, yakkas, there are many, many suttas related to them, like Alavaka Sutta, Hemavata Sutta. And likewise, different suttas are there where Buddha has discussions with this group of people, and they come and ask questions, and they sometimes come and ask various questions. And even if you refer Atanatiya Sutta, another interesting one, where certain yakkas actually they come with the, as far as I can remember, with the Chatum Maharajika Devas, and as their supporters, they are coming and they are telling, they are giving kind of a boom that to the Buddha and to his followers, okay, you monks are staying on in the forest, and the yakkas are sometimes associated in those forests, and they are not really like the monks, so you might be in trouble. So therefore, I am giving you a boon. So you better recite this particular verse, this particular sutta, and then they start protecting you. They may not harm you. So likewise, these kind of interesting discussions have happened. So I mean, these are quite Buddhist literature, and we can't immediately verify all these things, And again, we can't all deny all these things. Yeah.
Just about time, but we have got one more question that we can be
Yes.
So, question number 707. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, thank you for your valuable advice so far. Do you have any advice on how to handle bullying or aggressive behavior from others? One method I thought of is similar to the Dharma sermon today with the Buddha and Yaka. He addressed difficult questions or comments based on the other's understanding in a wise way. However, it is harder in reality to be calm and not get upset, especially ruminating about what one could have said to protect oneself. How can we be wise when others are taunting, being untruthful or aggressive? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, different, I mean, we can't give a kind of a one generalized answer, but it may be depending on the situation and depending on the person. I mean, you may have to handle 10 people and probably those 10 people are having different characters, different situations, different scenarios, context, and depending on that situation, so what would be the best way of my behavior? So certain person may be quite soft. So probably you can approach him in a more soft manner. You can talk to him with soft words. Probably he may listen to you. But another person may be a rough character and also doing something wrong. And if you use soft words, probably he might not listen to you. So are we going to fail on that situation? Suppose that he is under you, that you are the supervisor, you are the administrator. You are the chief, and under you there may be a rough character, but still he's one of your employees. On such situation, probably we may have to use certain rough ways to tame them. So therefore, Buddha in a way has given a more different answer here. Buddha mentioned, sometimes I use soft skills, sometimes I use rough skills. So soft skills, what I mean here is more soft words, more relaxed, more calm, and more type of easy type of words. But on the other hand, certain other times Buddha blame others, Buddha use some strong words, Buddha has banished certain monks, Buddha punish certain monks, and sometimes Buddha himself left the whole order, I mean a group of monks, because they are ill behaving. So likewise, Buddha also has taken certain rough end to tame the monks. So therefore there's a very interesting sutta called Kesi Sutta, where a person called Kesi, who is a horse tamer, come and have a discussion with the Buddha. And Buddha asked, how are you taming the horses? Then Kesi mentioned that he is also using the same thing, very much like sometimes he used soft skills to tame horses. Sometimes he used the whip, he used various sticks and all these things, rough methods to tame the horse. Buddha also similarly mentioned, I am also using both ways to tame these, the combination of both even. Not only soft and the rough, but sometimes soft and rough both. So likewise, it is difficult to say every time we have to use this, rather depending on the situation, depending on the person, depending on that person's mood, we may have to use different approaches.
So that's the last question for today, and I think we've gone a little bit more time as well, so we can close the program.
Kamila, I have a small announcement. Probably I might not be able to conduct next week's session. On 18th, I might not be able to conduct the session because we have the Chitta Vivekashrama program on next week scheduled. So probably, I don't know whether we can conduct the session on 25th. Christmas Day. If necessary, I probably can try to do that. But 18th, I might not be able to conduct the session.
Yes, but I was just going to say that we actually have sent out in the email as well that we will be pausing the program for the next 3 weeks.
Right.
So 18 December, 25th December, and 1st January. So right. We will meet again on the 8th of January. So right. Just to make that announcement as well. Yeah. So I would like to end the program and first thank Bhante for his valuable time. And also share merits with the organizers, both seen and unseen, and who enable this program. I would also like to thank and pass the merits for the participants who practiced and shared their questions in this program. Therwan Sarnai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, Therwan Sarnai.